Blog Talk Radio.
Today, a cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church, Reginald Pohl, the great Polish patriot who came to America to fight in the American Revolution, and a lot of streets are named after him, and even a county in Arkansas, Pulaski, Kazimierz Pulaski, born on this day. Those of us who use the telephone, which is now developed into cell phones and tablets and all that, you can thank Alexander Graham Bell. The guy who cut his ear off, the great painter, Vincent van Gogh, his birthday today. Many of the BBC concerts, British Broadcasting concerts, where the British let their hair down, Henry Wood, born on this day. I don't know who this black inventor was, Garrett Morgan, born on this day. Now, we have two interesting Canadians. Dr. Norman Bethune, he was a Canadian from, I believe, Toronto, who went to work with the most Mao Tse-tung and was on the great 5,000-mile trek to when they were fighting the Nationalists. He died at age 49. Another Canadian in events today, the guy who claimed to have discovered insulin as dealing with diabetes. There's a debate. A Romanian doctor claimed he discovered it sooner. Guy also died at age 49. General Matthew Ridgway, he succeeded General MacArthur after Truman fired him, his birthday. Allen Ginsberg, the poet. Now, he's the guy that got Mayor Richard Daley the first during the 1968 convention. He got Daley upset. Allen Ginsberg, and I was there, Allen Ginsberg said he was going to put LSD in the water, and Richard Daley freaked. That was one of the reasons we had a Chicago police riot. And Richard Daley was right. Nobody was seriously injured or killed, but they were bruised and battered. One of the Barrymores was born on this day, Diana Barrymore. Among the deaths, the great Saladin, he was one of the greatest of the Muslim generals, and about the time of Richard the Lionheart and the fight to reconquer the Holy Land. The guy who invented the polio vaccine, I remember it, Albert Sabin, died. Spanish guitarist Carlos Montoya. Among the events today, the first tavern opened in Boston, and it wasn't by Sam Adams. In 1791, the first revenue, Internal Revenue Act, it wasn't what a lot of people think it was with Lincoln and also Woodrow Wilson. But this dealt with alcohol and beverages. U.S. Mint was established on this day in 1791. Get this, the first Jewish governor in the South was in Georgia, and his name was David Emanuel. This was 1801. In 1803, we had to get more into this, the first impeachment of a federal judge, John Pickett, and a lot of firsts on this day. In 1812, we had the first foreign aid, which went to Venezuela because he had an earthquake. And then the office of U.S. Surgeon General was set up on this day. Got a bit of a cold here. And then also in 1815, United States declared war against Algeria. The Algiers, as it was called then, that was before the French took it over. And, of course, these were the Tripolitan and the Barbary Coast pirates. In 1820, we had the notorious Missouri Compromise, where slavery was permitted in Missouri. And that's also where Dred Scott fled to, and he was captured there. And then the case went up to the U.S. Supreme Court in the notorious Dred Scott decision. In 1837, United States recognized Texas, the Texas Republic, which was set up to be independent of Mexico. Now, the deal was the Mexicans allowed Americans, they even encouraged Americans to emigrate to Texas, which was Mexican territory. And the Americans were supposed to learn Spanish, and they were supposed to convert to Roman Catholicism. Well, we got the usual riffraff and people freebooters and people like that. And you had people like Sam Houston, Stephen Austin, and they considered General Santa Anna, the president and dictator of Mexico, they considered him a tyrant. And so they set up the Republic of Texas, and this led to the Mexican War, in which Texas eventually became an American territory, then a state, and then part of the Confederacy, and then was reintegrated into the United States and the Union after they lost in the Civil War. Also on this day, we had the first child labor law in Massachusetts in 1842. 1845, the first presidential veto was overridden. This was John Tyler, whose descendant was Harry Truman. Tyler was the vice president who succeeded on the death of General Taylor, and the motto at that time, the political slogan was Tippy Canoe and Tyler Too. John Tyler later revolted against the United States, joined the Confederacy. He kind of ended his career in decline. In 1849, the Department of the Interior was set up, and later they took over when the Indians lost their independence, the Indian tribes, and became dependents. There was the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and I did a project for the Department of the Interior for Native Americans in urban areas. There was the Transcontinental Railroad Survey, which came to fruition at Promontory Point in Utah after the Civil War. Also, in 1862, Tsar Alexander II in Russia liberated the Serbs, and then they went back to serfdom again after the assassination of Tsar Alexander II. Here's a guy who tried to do some good. In 1863, we had the first Civil War draft, and there were draft riots in New York that you could buy your way out. And then Lincoln set up the National Academy of Sciences. Lincoln did quite a bit of things, and also the land grant where states would set up universities. There was land grants for them. A lot of the, like, University of Illinois, University of Ohio, University of Virginia, a lot of the universities out here in the West. In 1865, after the Civil War and the freeing of the slaves, the Freedmen's Bureau was set up, and that was to help destitute blacks. And get this, in 1869, University of South Carolina opened their doors for all races. We don't know how whether this was talk or this was practice. And then in 1871, getting back to the Department of the Interior, the Indians tribes their status was changed from independent to dependent, and they came into the jurisdiction of the Department, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Department of the Interior, and of course their public and Indian housing, which is a mess and which is a scandal all over the United States, I worked briefly doing a project for, as I said, urban economic development and housing with the Department of the Interior. Rutherford, oh yes, then we had a one-term president. That was his one, he only wanted to be a one-term president like President Polk. B. Hayes was from Ohio, was part of the two states that are considered the mother of presidents, and that's Virginia and Ohio. Hayes was a Civil War veteran, and he set up the civil service system, which was destroyed by Bill Clinton, or shall we say emasculated. In 1879, the first female lawyer was allowed to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, or SCOTUS, and her name was Belva Ann Lockwood. In 1883, the United States Navy, Department of the Navy, decided they're going to build steel ships. Now, the first steel ship with the British Navy was called the HMS Dreadnought. And then in 1885, Ma Bell was set up at American Telephone and Telegraph, and a lot of people wish we could go back to that. Now, AT&T was broken up during the Nixon administration by the former governor of Ohio, became Attorney General. His name was Saxby. And in 1885, there was a racist thing, anti-Catholic, an organization called the American Protective Association. And also, Ann Sullivan started to teach Helen Keller, who was blind. A lot of events today. Now, also in this period, the Office of the Superintendent of Immigration, which later became the Department of Immigration and Naturalization section of the U.S. Treasury. In 1891, the judicial system was revised, and we had the setup of the U.S. Court of Appeals. They're the same as in any of the districts like we have out here, the Ninth Circuit. I worked in the Seventh Circuit building. In 1899, George Dewey became the first admiral of the Navy, and he, of course, was the successful victor at the Battle of Manila in the Spanish-American War. In 1900, U.S. Steel was set up. U.S. Forest Service was set up. In 1913, Ida B. Wells demonstrated for female suffragettes. And the vote till I think the Harding administration. Also in this time, excess profits. This is not a new idea. Excess profits of corporation were taxed. In 1917, this is not little known. Russia had a czar for one day. His name wasn't Putin. It was Michael, who was the brother of Nicholas II, who abdicated. That whole period. Now, Dr. Banting in 1921 claimed to have discovered insulin, which dealt with diabetes, but a Romanian doctor, I think it was Romanian, he claimed that he had discovered this earlier. But Banting died in World War II. I think he was flying to England from Newfoundland. There's an interesting story of how planes were ferried from Newfoundland, or they were flown over to Newfoundland during the Battle of Britain because Churchill needed planes. And Banting was on one of those planes, and he died. I guess he crashed in the ocean. He was also aged 49. In 1931, the Star Spangled Banner became the official national anthem. Now, Star Spangled Banner's melody is based on an English drinking song called Akron in Heaven. And, of course, it's in an unsingable key. You practically have to goose the soprano to get that high note. A lot of us think it should be Columbia, Gem of the Ocean or America the Beautiful, but we'll see. But at least the Stars and Stripes Forever is the official march. And on this day, John Dillinger escaped from jail and later ended up being the victim of the woman in red in front of the Biograph Theater in Chicago. And on this day also, the woman who thinks she should be queen, she divorced her husband, Michael Bowles. Camilla Parker Bowles divorced Michael Parker Bowles, or Michael Bowles, and she won after the guy she was supposedly having an affair with. And that's Prince Charles. Now, it is said that Camilla Parker Bowles always wanted to be queen, but I don't think the British will put up with this grasping woman. And I understand Queen Elizabeth, who's getting up there, is still dowdy, told off Camilla and told her to mind her place so she'd make sure she didn't inherit any money. Now, we've got a police scandal or an alleged police scandal here in San Francisco, and we're not sure these I think it was five cops were San Francisco police were indicted in federal court after 3 years, and there are some questions about that. But there have been allegations of the police department had drug scandals. Now, the first major modern police department scandal, corruption scandal, occurred in New York during the 60s and 70s, and it's depicted fairly accurately in the Serpico movie and book. Serpico was an undercover cop who was exposing drug dealers. He wouldn't take any bribes. And Al Pacino starred in the movie. It's very accurate, and he was blown away by his own cops who tried to shut him up. In the 50s, the world's richest cop was a guy named Captain Tubbo Gilbert. He was in Cook County, and he was charged with all kinds of corruption. I don't know if he was convicted. Now, in the late 50s, I vaguely remember this, and it was called the Somerdale Police Station Scandal. And what it was Somerdale was in the northernmost part of Chicago. It was a police station where cops getting ready for retirement but not retired. They were sent there because it was a quiet neighborhood and all that. They caught a burglar named Morrison, he was a little guy, and they caught him burglarizing the house, and they decided to put Morrison, who was known as the babbling burglar, they wanted to put him to work for them, burglarizing houses. And he was caught, and he blew the whistle, and they had a Republican state's attorney or district attorney, a guy named Ben Adamowski, and it was called the Somerdale Police Scandal. And Richard Daley, who barely won election the first time in Chicago for mayor of Chicago, was getting ready to run for re-election. And he had to remove the police department. It was a guy named Timothy O'Connor, who was police chief, and his office was in City Hall right next to Mayor Daley's office. And so Daley was a very shrewd politician. A lot of people don't know that, but Richard Daley had a law degree. He never practiced law, and he had an accounting degree. He was better at that. He was also the finance director for the state of Illinois during the governorship of Adlai Stevenson. And he fairly kept his nose clean. Richard Daley decided that he would set up a committee to search throughout the United States for the best man to take over and clean up the Chicago Police Department. So they contacted a guy named Orlando W. Wilson. He was actually Scandinavian background. He was a professor of criminology at the University of California in Berkeley. Now, prior to that, he had been a colonel in the U.S. Army Police Corps, MPs, and had worked at Nuremberg. So O.W. Wilson came out to Chicago and was chairman of this committee, and everybody after a certain amount of time thought, well, here's the best guy qualified at the Chicago Police Department. And so he was selected Chicago Police Department superintendent, and he did clean up the department. He moved the office of the superintendent out of City Hall and over to police headquarters, I believe at 11th and State. Chicago Police really became more professional. And, of course, you should read a book, Boss, by Mike Royko, who I was acquainted with, Chicago Tribune columnist, and he wrote a book on about how Chicago cops would shake down people and how they would beat up people in the alleys and carry brass knuckles and things like that. So police scandals in major American cities are nothing new. Now, among the political fiction, this is interesting. Our professional politician governor, Edmund Jr., has been on TV lately talking about he's questioning this legalization of marijuana. Now, one of the political fictions about marijuana, and I can speak for this personally because I did it in the 60s, was that the marijuana then was mellow. But over the years, with this pollinization, with this high-intensity lamps and all these techniques to grow more marijuana in a shorter period of time and more potent marijuana, it's dangerous. And people, it's as bad as drinking and driving. There are people who are smoking pot and driving. They're on motorcycles, on bicycles. They blow it in the face of their babies and in the face of their dogs. And, of course, so in effect, one of the political fictions is that this marijuana of the 2014 is not harmful, but that's a fiction, and it's dangerous. So, in effect, so what we're saying is the marijuana of 2014 is not the mellow pot of the 60s and 70s. Now, last night at what is becoming increasingly becoming a bore, it was the Academy Awards, or the there are other names for it. Anyway, we had Sky Leto, who got the best other actor award, and he, I understand, I heard part of his speech on talking about the Ukraine and the Crimea and all that. He is ignorant of the history of that region. In 1856, I think it was, the British and the French invaded the Crimea and were fighting with the Tsar, and they were defeated. And of course, what they got out of it, the British got out of it, was Florence Nightingale. And when Russia, in effect, won that stalemate. During World War, during the time of Stalin, and Stalin, the butcher, and one of the worst despots of all time, did a deliberate, what he wanted to do, collectivization of the farms in Russia and Ukraine, especially because Ukraine was the breadbasket for the Soviet Union. And what he, and when the peasants resisted, he deliberately starved them. He created a famine in which 20 million people died of starvation. These were kids as well. And it's one of the things that the so-called progressives or the closet communists cover up. They don't talk about this, but it happened. It really, it was real. And what happened when Hitler invaded Russia, the Ukrainians embraced the Nazis and Hitler because they hated Stalin. And, of course, when the after the defeat of the German 6th Army at Stalingrad, this was a turning point in the east, the Red Army started to roll west. And when they were victorious after the fall of Berlin and the surrender of the Nazis, Stalin took his revenge on the Ukraine and anybody that had backed the Nazis, even the soldiers who were captured and later fought against Stalin's Red Army. Because they were hoping under General Vlaslov to set up to be free of the communists. So Stalin took a horrible revenge on all these people. In fact, the director of KALW here in San Francisco, who gave me my first break in San Francisco radio, he was also a teacher of English at the school district, Ted Samuel, was a sergeant at a railroad station when a Russian POWs who were captured by the Nazis, they were forcibly repatriated to the Soviet Union, where some of them knew what was going to happen. They could try to commit suicide, hang themselves. This was the deal that FDR mistakenly made at Yalta with Stalin. Stalin demanded all Russian soldiers be returned to Russia, whether they wanted to turn or not. And what happened was, when those trains reached the marshaling railroad yards in Moscow, the KGB, or NKVD, which is what they were known at that time, went on board these trains and took off the officers for torture and death over at the notorious Lubyanka prison. And, of course, there was the infamous trial of General Vlaslov, who was actually a turncoat. He was a hero of the Battle of Moscow. And he was captured by the Germans, and he agreed to set up an independent army to fight the Rush, Stalin's Red Army. So there's a lot of history there with the Ukraine, and also I understand from my Russian contacts that the Ukraine is the eastern part is Orthodox and pro-Russian. The western part is apparently Roman Catholic and pro-Western. Now, also, after Stalin died in 1952, Khrushchev and Bulganin, they were called B and K, became the rulers of Russia. They first thing they did, they ganged up on Lavrenty Beria, who was the head of the NKVD, who thought he should succeed Stalin. And what they did was they moved first and got and executed him. And Khrushchev got rid of Bulganin. And Khrushchev became the first party secretary. He made a deal on the Crimea, which is the home port of the Russia's Black Sea Fleet. And it's just like we have our military base down at Guantanamo. We're not giving that up. So this is apparently one of the factors down there in the Crimea. And this whole, what looks like another civil war, and of course people are picking up on Mr. Rowe that he's just rattling a saber that has no point to it. That's one way to put it. So when you have these actors and these other leftists running their mouths, go back and look at the history, and you'll find out that they don't know what they're talking about, and they're really doing a disservice and just should stick to acting and stop trying to promote. They're entitled to their opinion. They're entitled to be heard, but we have no obligation to heed. So we are going to be back Wednesday. Hopefully there won't be any more problems. And also we have decided to refocus our video magazine, Amicus Veritas, on YouTube, and we are going to do the hard news, exposés, and other relevant information, video voyeur exposures, on Amicus Veritas YouTube, AmicusVeritas. We've set up a separate channel called Amicus Veritas Poopourri, AmicusVeritas, POTPOURRI. And we're going to feature our animal stuff that we've done, our interviews with authors, things like we interviewed the head of the Vienna Writing Academy, and also the Clydesdale horses. We have that in the can. A lot of stuff that I've done in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States that are environmental related, will be on that channel. So we will end now, and we invite you to go to check out. We only have one video up there right now. We'll be putting more, and it will also feature cat and canine tales of the city, all the funny things that animals do. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker. Where are we? and we hope you go to our YouTube site. And because we were hacked, we're trying to find the original disc to our Amicus Veritas blog. So as soon as we find that, we will be putting that back up. So here we go with our ending music, politics and poker. Excuse me. Where are we?
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a kick.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it about? We should make Jack Riley the gun.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and carve and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll stay.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about it?
said Peterson.
You idiot, that's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot, that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average guy.
We'll be back Wednesday at 3:30, and we'll have an update on political animals. We left out a major city, probably have the worst and most corrupt police department in the country. Peter Paul Rizzola, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site and Amicus Veritas